Have you got good weather today? Just meh.
I mean, it was a bit overcast this morning.
Yeah.
But it's all right. This ice cream truck, mate, has been doing circles around where I live every day for about 3 weeks. And I live in a block of flats.
Yeah.
So every single road,
all
I can hear is whatever it is. And it's driving me slightly mad, actually.
He's trying to make his money back after a quiet few months, I suppose.
Yeah, but I mean, it's loud.
Yeah.
It's really loud. Like, I'm in central London on the fourth floor of a tower block. Like, come on, man. Turn your ice cream horn down. It's really annoying. Anyway, how I have started recording. I'm just telling you now, so you know. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Yeah, I'm a bit tired, to be honest. I've had a busy few weeks of training, which has been really good. Like, the quality has been there, and yeah, no, it's been going well, and just being patient. Really, that's the name of the game at the moment for me. Is just being patient and just going through the steps, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so everyone knows I've got Cam Mason on the other side in very north of this rock that we're on. I mean, I'm basically in France to you, as far as you're concerned.
Yeah, and probably with the weather, you're basically in France being down south, yeah.
it's dry. That's about as much as I can say at the moment. Cam races for Trinity. We've known each other for quite a while before you. We were pre-Trinity days.
Yeah. From Jam. It's a coincidence that today I'm wearing my Jam t-shirt. That's the t-shirt I'm wearing today. And yeah, it brings back good memories of working with you guys while on my kind of freelancey, kind of independent cyclocross program that I made for myself.
It was really cool what you did. Like, you basically just sort of decided to go alone for a season, didn't you?
Yeah. It was just a number of things, just having that control and just where my development was at the moment. I was kind of in between things. Like, I'd just come off the Scottish mountain bike program, which is quite structured and it's obviously a summer thing. And I was turning my focus more to the cyclocross and just realized that if I wanted the kind of level of support, I'd have to kind of go find it myself. There wasn't quite the package in the UK at the time. Like, obviously, TP Racing and Trinity ended up being that for me in the end, but at the time I wasn't really on the level to be riding with that. But I made this kind of setup around me that would allow me to just go and get stuck into Belgium, which is just what you got to do. There's no other real way to do it. If you're in cyclocross, you've just got to go get stuck in. It's the main thing. So it did its job, and I'm pretty proud of where it's come and full circle all the way to Trinity.
Yeah, I mean it was awesome to, you know, we were involved really quite a small part, but it was awesome to work with you on that sense, especially as, like, you know, a young and really exciting prospect in cycling and cyclocross and mountain biking, kind of just all of it, really. Someone who not only was and is an incredibly talented rider, but also someone that gets it, like, understands the bigger picture, as in, you're an advertisement to the brand you work with. You're also, you know, you're also your own brand.
Mm-hmm.
Your own identity. And I think, you know, one of your biggest, like, something you should be really proud of is that you completely understand that and the value of that. And I feel like that, to me, is like one of the best things about working with you when we worked together. It was like, you just got it. We didn't have to explain it to you. You just got it. Like, it was like, oh, this is fucking amazing.
Yeah. Oh, thanks a lot. I mean, yeah, I appreciate that. And yeah, it definitely was a conscious thing. Everyone has their own character and all of that and their own ways of racing, but not everyone kind of gets it across or knows how to get it across. Cause there's some great personalities out there. Great, charisma on the bike. But yeah, if you can't show that, if you're not at the front of races or you're not on mainstream media, then no one's going to see it if you're racing at a regional or national level. So my kind of idea, well, it was never really a conscious thing, but it just happened to be that I would make videos, make content, post photos, and give a bit of insight into what I was a person. And that happened to be kind of YouTube and Instagram based, but I read plenty of amazing blogs from the guys who are on Dave Rayner or others that, yeah, they use blogging as their way to get that across. And I get lots of messages about like, oh, like how much of a impact has like YouTube had on like how well you're known and like your career and stuff. And I think, yeah, YouTube is the main kind of thing that I'm doing, but it could easily have been something else. It could easily be Facebook. I could have gone like well hard at Facebook and got loads of followers on that. It's, I just kind of have chosen my platform that works for me. Like Instagram stories are the best thing that you could probably do as a bike rider. They're so easy. And if you can get across who you are as a person, they're really easy. It's a really easy media to digest as like a viewer of cycling. I think, a lot of people don't really kind of use social media to its full potential. And it's not about like going like mega hard. It's just like that casualness and that kind of authenticity that's really important, is just showing who you are and you'll come across well.
Completely agree. It's like being genuine and honest and also being consistent seems to be the, in my opinion, like the big strengths to it is like, you know, just be consistent and true to who you are. Set yourself up like a series of rules or guidelines that you want to stick to and stick to them.
Yeah.
And, you know, don't deviate from what is true to you more than anything. But like, yeah, I mean, and then, so you did some pretty cool stuff when we worked together, like you did Dirty Reaver. And I mean, that was really cool. The bike, I would just think the bike looked cool, let alone anything else. I remember there's some pretty epic photos of it. And also, I think there was, did you do a photo where you were basically doing a front wheelie, right, leant over on the bike? I'm sure there's one.
Yeah, I did like an endo photo,
Yeah, it was a great photo. And I've done Dirty River as well. Mm-hmm. It's such a good day out. It's so fun.
Yeah.
It's hard.
It is really hard. And I think, the main thing about Dirty River is it's so always up and down. It's there's not big climbs. It's just you're always climbing or descending. And that actually was the thing that took its toll after 8-9 hours on the bike, was just the you're either like focusing on your gearing while you're going up hills, or you're focusing on like choosing a good line down hills. It's like, it's not the Alps, it's not the mountains, it's just Kielder Forest, but it's always up and down. And you're covering ground and the feel, there's these things, like I've been doing a bit more of these kind of endurance stuff recently, and there's just so many more aspects to it, like different, obviously very different to cyclocross racing, but it has its own perks of fueling and the mental side. And I am in awe of you guys doing these multi-day things. It's something that's totally like out of my box, just like it blows me away, these kind of multi-day sleep deprivation stuff. I think I've got a handle on the maybe like full day riding, but I've got a long way to go if I want to have a go at these multi-day sleep deprivation things.
You've got a few years on you there, mate.
Yeah, they look savage. But no, I've been doing a few kind of big days on the bike. We did Capital Trail last week, which is a bikepacking route. Starting in Edinburgh and finishing Edinburgh, and it goes all the way down to the Scottish borders. And the main is a mountain bike bikepacking route, and we did it on gravel bikes, and that was a little bit of a mistake. We were in the main section of it where you're off road. It was hard going. So that was 250k and 5,000 meters of climbing,
that's a good day out.
Yeah, that was the kicker really. And as we got further into the day, we realized like it was pretty hard to cover ground at that with that elevation and that kind of terrain. I'd love to do more things like that. I wouldn't be able to do it too often just with racing and stuff, but I think this kind of situation has lent itself to that, to those more fun, like casual things. Although riding for 16, 17 hours isn't very casual, but it's good fun.
It's a completely different beast at the end of the day, isn't it? What are there any of these, like, the long races that have been on your, like, bucket list for when you're maybe older? Is there any that you're really keen to do?
Yeah, there's quite a few, and, like, it changes quite a lot because all it takes is, like, one person to post a cool video about it. Like, that's basically what GB Giro was for me. Totally having my eyes open to how cool this little event was by EF Education and Lachlan Moore. That is on the bucket list. I've ridden a bit of the route in Scotland, but there's so much more to it than just that bit. It's the amount of ground covered and the terrain, and GB Giro is massive. And then probably outside the UK, the Swiss Epic looks great. That's a mountain bike stage race, kind of similar to Cape Epic, but the terrain there looks particularly challenging. I've got a list on my phone that is not really getting ticked off, but it kind of gets bigger every time I look at a new event and go like, "Whoa, I'd really like to do that." So
yeah, I reckon you'd. I think you would, just because you're a fit, strong young lad. I think without even realizing it, I think you'd do a lot better than you maybe think.
Yeah. Initially. Well,
I think you'd do really well.
As I said, like there's some aspects of bikepacking, like in the, like from what I've seen in Atlas Mountain or Silk Road Race, like the sleep and the looking after yourself, like that would take a bit more experience. But yeah, it's the type of thing I'd be up for challenging myself for, because I definitely resonate with a lot of the kind of that side of things. Is that kind of exploration side is interesting to me.
It's funny because, like, Atlas, Atlas this year is the first year of it, but they positioned it as a gravel race initially, for gravel bikes, and it very quickly became clear that you needed a mountain bike for it. It's super technical, super technical. And it was, the surface as well was very loose, so that made it harder, especially on a gravel bike. And the gradient, like climbing, wasn't so bad, but how steep some of the descents were made it tough.
Okay, so it was the kind of technicality of it, actually, not the altitude or the amount of climbing, but just technical.
I would like to go back and do it again, but I would definitely do it on a mountain bike. Hands down, I wouldn't do it on a gravel bike this time. And I think a large proportion of the people that actually finished it did it on mountain bikes. I don't think many people on gravel bikes finished. But I mean, as a country, that is freaking stunning. It's beautiful. And I think what a lot of people, I don't think people really saw it in the documentary, but the bit that got me more than anything was the colours in, like, the sunrises and sunsets. Like, the actual colours of the scenery was, like, stunning, really stunning. It's a tricky place in, like, the terms of, like, cultural differences, and quite quickly there's cultural misunderstandings that happen. Beautiful, like, really beautiful place. Very different to Kyrgyzstan. Kyrgyzstan kind of had a bit of everything. Morocco felt very deserty.
Kyrgyzstan is on my bucket list for sure. Just, I've been following Ed Pratt for the last few years, who unicycled around the world, and he actually lives there right now in Bishkek. And the kind of the camping and cycle touring he does there just looks insane. I'd absolutely love to go there. Just the mountains and it being quite alpine, but then also being so far away from Europe.
The bit that got me about it was the altitude is the bit that we're it didn't affect me too bad, but I know a lot of people who it really affected. But your first climb, which is Kegati, when you get to the top, so you literally, it takes so long to get up it, and then you get to the top and you're struggling to breathe, and you're suffering from the altitude, definitely, a bit dizzy, a bit lightheaded. But then it's like you almost go in this little gap in the top of the mountain, and that's where the path is, and it's like, boop, there you go, straight down the other side.
Crazy.
But when you're on that very top bit, I've never felt so small ever. Yeah. Like, it was just epic. And like, any photo I took of it, doesn't do it justice.
Yeah.
The descent was sketchy as fuck, but
yeah,
that's part of the fun of it still. Like, yeah, is, you know, these countries that are very like unexplored are just, mm-hmm, there's something really exciting about them, definitely. Then anyway, you're now, as you said, you're now with Trinity. Like, Trinity was sort of set, it was basically, it used to be Tom's, what was it, Tom Pidcock Racing was kind of where it started from, wasn't it?
It came kind of, out of the back of Tom wanting a more tailored cyclocross program, and actually then has come into more of the road cycling thing, and has kind of replaced the Wiggins team that was functioning last year. It's ended up giving me a really pretty diverse kind of range of opportunities from gravel to road to cyclocross, which I couldn't really ask for more at my stage of my riding, from where I am in cyclocross and making the steps I made. Obviously I haven't been able to kind of make use of those opportunities quite as much this summer in terms of road racing, just the lack of, but fingers crossed things are starting to appear on our calendars, which is great news. So, we'll see how we get on there.
Yeah. You've got backing of great sponsors as well at that team. You know, you've got the kit from Matt, you've got Red Bull, you've got Trinity Sports Management, who's obviously the sort of name of the team. You've got Specialized Bikes, you've got SRAM and Zip as a sponsor. It's a proper professional team setup.
It makes a big difference as well, just having that level, just all the little things that add up from Wahoo always being there, and especially during lockdown, with trainers or heart rate monitors, all these little things that add up, and as well, like, not just product wise, like Red Bull have had a really big impact on our team from a kind of a marketing side of things. Like, mm-hmm, they are the marketing giants, and that's their whole brand is marketing, and to be involved with us and what we're doing, and we felt it in the cyclocross as well, like that's something that they were moving into more, and it fit really well with them sponsoring Tom and also sponsoring the team while they got more involved with World Cup. So no, it's really exciting, and it's all the better for me as well. Like, if I can chat to these brands and kind of make connections with them, I cannot complain.
So we when was it last time I saw you?
Early February in Hoogerheide.
It feels like ages ago. Well, it was ages ago, wasn't it? And you were racing out there. You and Tom were racing, weren't you?
Yeah.
And it was a pretty fresh day, but good weather-wise, I think.
The
conditions seemed pretty good.
Yeah, that's it. The Hoogerheide course there was, that day was pretty much as good conditions you could get it. Like, it had been relatively dry in the week. And it was a bit cool, but the course was running incredibly fast. Like, our average speed for that race probably wasn't that impressive, but if I had a power meter on the same bike the whole race, the normalized power would have just been through the roof, because it's so incredibly punchy. It's maximum 20 second efforts, and then you're like holding onto your bike for 10 seconds going back down the banking. And that was probably the most fast paced race I've done. Just like, finished the race and it felt like your brain was a bit fried, because you just spent the whole race just following wheels and making split second decisions, and all the way to finish as well. Like, I was catching and I had a sprint finish with one of the Dutch riders, it was just very full on.
You finished high though, didn't you? You did really well.
Yeah, I surprised myself there. I was, when I woke up and practiced the course, and I kind of wrote it off a little bit mentally. I was like, nah, it's a bit fast and not that technical, but I had great legs and chased back well after not the best start. And I finished fifth, which is my best ever World Cup result, and was not expected to be got there, and that was just 1 week before Worlds as well, and that kind of just last season, every weekend was like this new level of confidence that was just coming, and that was kind of the peak of it all. Was 1 week before Worlds, getting my best ever result, and then going into Worlds as almost not a favorite, but just a one to watch, which is just the most bizarre experience. But hey, that's a pretty cool thing to say, that you were kind of a one to look out for at World Champs.
So how many you've done? Was that your second World Champs? Was it?
Yeah, second World Champs. Yeah.
How much do you think you learned? I think it's nuts to think that like you know you've gone and raced a couple of World Champs. It's super cool. Like, how old are you again? You're young.
19. Yeah.
This is what I find really crazy. Is you're 11 years younger than me, and you talk to me like, you know, you're older than you come across, like you're very mature for your, which is a good thing. Like, I'm not saying it's a bad thing, it's a really good thing. Very mature, level-headed person. So that's your second World Champs, and it didn't quite go as well, if I remember right, as maybe you thought.
The first one was just the kind of perfect example of a learning experience. Like, was super stoked just to get selected for that one in Bogens in Denmark. And looking back, I learned loads of things. And if I hadn't have done those things, then I wouldn't have got close to how I did in Switzerland, where I got eighth. So, looking back, retrospect, it's all just little steps and little learning things. But, just happy for those little things looking back, I guess.
What would you say is the kind of like course in a cyclocross race that suits you the best?
I've done well on some, like a lot of different courses, which I probably just shows that it's not really like about the course where you do well. But in terms of the ones I enjoy, like the more mountain biking, the better, the more climbing, the better. So Namur was a really good one. I didn't have the best race. I had a solid race, but the course there is just unbelievable. I think that's definitely a bucket list race if you are a fan of cyclocross, to fly to Charleroi and maybe get a rental or get a bus and go and watch the Namur at the Citadel. It's just unreal. Mm. Unreal. We had epic conditions. It was the race when in the elites everyone fell off on the last lap. Matthew, Toon and Tom all fell off because it just got hypothermic. And in the women's race, it was epic as well. That was just, one of the maddest races. But another good course that definitely gets a mention is Overijse, which is like it's quite a traditional race. It's been on the circuit for really quite a while. And it's just kind of characterized by really steep, sketchy descents, routes, and a big old kind of power 1 minute climb. I think that's what I realized last year in Belgium. Like, I did maybe 30-40 races in the space of like 4 months, which is like a lot. And I just realized the variety of courses. Like, 1 week you're racing sand, the next week you're like almost racing in a town, like a town center crit almost, on cyclocross bikes. Like, just big variety, which is great. Like, each race is definitely not the same, and that's really attractive to me, is that like each week it's different tire pressures, it's different bike setup, it's maybe a different chain ring, because the course you're going to average 25 km an hour instead of 15 km an hour. So it's not one dimensional in that respect. That's a real part of it.
What I really love about cyclocross is the accessibility at all levels to get involved with it. So that, like, in around London, there's like two or three leagues that you can go to, and like they're pretty chill. Like, they're not particularly strict. Like, they say like to have an off-road bike, but it can be a mountain bike, it can be a cross bike, it could be single speed, it could be fixed gear off-road. Yeah. Like, they're not really strict in it, and like, you get guys that like hardcore racing it at the front, but then equally you get people that are just like doing it for the experience, and everyone's there like heckling and laughing and sort of taking the piss. It's for me, that was like, I probably first started in cyclocross when I would have been early 20s, I just did it for fun. I literally did it as a way to do something different in the winter.
Yeah, yeah. I think, yeah, it's great. And a lot of people, yeah, find that little bit of love for it. It's definitely type 2 fun if you're a roadie, because you're probably going to spend, if you're going to spend a bit of time on your arse just working out how to handle this bike on silly terrain. But if you've got the right attitude, then that's pretty good fun to do in the winter on a kind of cold Sunday. But now there's some great leagues around the country, and up in Scotland, yeah, we've got a really great Scottish cyclocross series. And yeah, it's just any bike. If it can handle off-road, then you're very welcome, and everyone gets the same amount of time to race their bike. If you do lots of laps, then awesome, you might finish on the podium. If you don't do many, then that's no worries, you're still going to have a tough race. So that's it's good. It's not, from what I've seen of the roads scene, it's not quite as kind of cutthroat. It's, yeah, you're all pretty, when you line up on that start line at a cyclocross race, you're all in for the same amount of suffering, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how like strong or fit you are, you know that your heart rate is going to go through the roof in about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And you just kind of get on with it. You get absolutely, not always, but generally get filthy. You're probably going to crash.
Yeah. I know, not always you're going to get filthy. That's important, is don't get put off by the mud, because you can find some dry park crosses. So if you're not a fan of that, then there's some faster races out there for you as well.
Yeah, very true, very true. And so obviously this year has been, everything's kind of got chucked. Basically, someone's just turned around and gone, fuck it, let's just put 2020 into a blender and just see what happens.
Yeah.
Right, what, I mean, so I'm imagining your plan over the summer period is probably mountain biking and road racing originally. Now that's all completely changed, and you've done some really like fun, like epic long rides.
Yeah.
Like what's the plan for the rest of the year?
Yeah, so what we are now at July. So the cross season is approaching. Like each week, it gets closer, and I'm starting to think about that. And we've had some really good positives in the last few weeks in terms of cyclocross. The UCI have released a planned World Cup season, which starts later in November, to kind of stop any clashes with the rescheduled road season. So that's a real good positive for us. I think a lot of the mountain bikers felt that as well. They didn't have any dates, or the road guys, they didn't have any dates, but once they kind of were given a date, it helps massively with training and just day-to-day motivation. So yeah, that's kind of where I am at the moment. I know we'll definitely, well, it can always change, but all things going well, like October, November, I'll be racing cross again. And the ideal scenario is that I race road as well in August, September and October, possibly, just depending on the kind of the calendar and the team, just to kind of get that speed up and finish off that last bit of preparation for the cross. Because yeah, it's been a long summer. Like my last race was in Belgium in February. But it's gone really well. Like I haven't really missed the racing too much. I think I've been quite, like I was saying at the start, like I've just been embracing the process of it. And I think that's helped massively. Like I haven't felt too restless or feeling that need. I've been kind of fueling that competitiveness in other ways, like with Strava, because you can't go wrong with Strava. Like for all you can bash it and all you can say about Strava KOM hunting, it is going as fast as you can at the end of the day. I'm a little bit of a fan of that when I'm going well, but when I'm not going well, then it's a bit demoralizing. But so just ticking away really, and the plan is that cyclocross will happen. There will be differences and changes and social distancing, and there won't be big crowds at races, and that will have a knock-on effect to race organizers. So that's going to be interesting. I think they're
it's going to completely change the way that a race feels, isn't it?
Yeah, really. Like there's going to be, everyone's team and everyone's staff is going to have to be kind of bubbled up, so there won't be too much socializing or mixing, which is a shame, because the amazing thing about cyclocross is that it's such a parade that moves every weekend. It's literally twice a week. It's this parade that comes together and puts on races, and you get to know the other riders and the other staff members, and it's So I think all those aspects will be there, but just in a kind of a different way. But it's just something we're going to have to adjust to. I've been kind of following up on the F1 that's been happening over the weekend in Austria, and and the atmosphere there looks pretty interesting with no crowds and everyone wearing masks. But yeah, it's for the love of the sport. It's for all these things, and it's for the greater good of putting racing on. And I think that's just some of the sacrifices, I guess. There's been a lot more sacrifice than that's happened in the last few months. So yeah, it's great that we're seeing sport going ahead in one way or another.
That's a good way of thinking about it. Definitely that is. Do you think, do you know of other guys in your teams who've mentally really struggled with not having that structure of like being able to like know when their next race is and stuff?
Yeah, I think every bike rider at the moment has had a few weeks of just being a bit meh, because day to day in the tough days of training, like it's those little things that get you through it. And if there are literally no races on the horizon, then that makes it tough. And I think in our team, we've done pretty well. Like our managers and stuff have been really kind of thoughtful of looking after us, and we've been putting on the Zwift rides, and we go on a Zoom call every week and just chat shit for an hour really, and just get that kind of camaraderie up that we're missing, because without coronavirus, we'd be kind of racing every weekend and hanging about in the camper van and just getting to know each other. And it's a brand new team, and it's 11 guys that have never really kind of raced together before. And I think with the team have made a big effort to look after us from that side of things, which we definitely appreciate. And it's helped.
What who is it? Is it Kurt? Is that the guy?
Yeah, Kurt. So Kurt is our kind of manager, along with Andrew McQuaid. So they kind of run things from the outside. Yeah.
Kurt's like, I met him when I came to see you race. He is a good character.
Yeah, he is exactly that. So he's my coach, and he kind of directs the cyclocross program really, really, really strongly. Obviously, it's a big logistical thing is cyclocross, and just with the hotels and the transfers and the racing and the technical side of things. And he's got to be in charge of the mechanics as well, the four or five mechanics that we have, and Zenya our soigneur. Like, there's a lot of moving parts, and he's a very hardworking man. And he's been actually getting very, very, very fit in this kind of quarantine. It's probably the most time he's had to ride his bike. So he's
the amount of berries you said there means that he is absolutely smashing it.
Yeah, he's a force to be reckoned with. So I think he'll be racing faster than a lot of us when we get back racing. Nah, it'll be interesting to see when we go out to Belgium. He's going to be flying.
Yeah. It's interesting as well. So the team setup is primarily British, couple of Irish, and a Kiwi.
He's Aussie. He's from Tasmania. Oh, Aussie. Yeah. Oops. I was just making sure I had that good. No, he's probably used to it. No, so Zach's from Tassie.
Ah, yeah, he's an Aussie. So it's very, British orientated, which is great. It's really, really cool. It's nice to see. Do you know what I think as well? It's like at the moment we're at a weird time with British teams where there isn't really a lot. Especially like you take a step away from World Tour, we've lost so many teams in the last couple of years, and not many teams have kind of stepped up.
Yeah, it's a funny place, and to be honest, I have never been that involved with the kind of UK road racing side of things. Just I'm not really a road racer, but from the outside looking in, not at the moment, it's not a particularly good situation to be in, and it's a tough place. But I think Trinity are hopefully doing it in a way that is kind of diversifying and finding new ways of getting interest. So that's whether that's through different types of events or different types of marketing, like the video side of things that we did in the cross season was massive. And the idea was to carry that on into road racing. And when road racing does come back, then videos will be a part of it. And I'm sure people will be excited to watch them. And we've seen it with other teams as well. Like Vitus have done some great stuff with Zwift Racing, and I think that really has shown their true colors of how much kind of effort they're willing to put in, and I'm sure their sponsors will be appreciative of it, and same with St. Piran. And yeah, I think we're just moving into a place where the traditional kind of UK road race team, the traditional ways of doing things are maybe a bit outdated. There's lots of fat. I think Joe Laverick's talked about it a bit on Twitter as well, about the kind of the UK model of cycling doesn't really bring in enough money just to support it. But there's other ways of doing things through media, through kind of different types of different types of advertising or events. Fingers crossed Trinity are doing the right thing, and from the inside they're working really hard, so it's a good place to be.
I guess a part of it is making what I've always thought in my weird years of doing a bit of everything is like, it's about making things desirable and wanting people to be part of it.
Yeah.
And the videos help to, you know, make people feel like they're part of Trinity. And the making it desirable is like, the kit looks great, the bikes look great, the team looks fantastic. Like, it looks like a really slick, well-run thing. So you kind of are nailing creating something that's desirable and accessible because you're showing so much of it and it looks good. Yeah. And that's a thing which I think maybe you go back like 4 or 5 years ago and like the domestic teams definitely weren't doing that. It probably felt a bit, in a way, kind of a bit elitist and a bit like a little bit snobby. But that I think a lot of that has probably come from maybe from the cyclocross side, is that it's much more accessible. And even like, you know, I've chatted to Joe about it as well. Like on the TT side, time trialing is super accessible. Like, you know, and the level of going to a TT, like you rock up any bike, you could turn up on a Brompton if you wanted to. Go as hard as you want for 10 miles or whatever it is. It doesn't really matter. Like, it doesn't matter. And as long as you do the best you can do, that's great. It's the same in like a cross race. As long as you do what the best you can do, it's awesome. And I feel like that, as you say, Vitus are doing a really good job of it now. Trinity seem to be nailing it. It's obviously been a real shame that teams like Madison Genesis and JLT Condor are no longer around, because they had a lot of history and heritage to them. But maybe it's a good thing as well. Maybe they were just a bit boring.
Well, I can't really say, but it just shows that it is a tough time at the moment, and it requires teams to maybe work that a little bit harder or differently or smarter, and you're only going to know unless you try. So I think we're seeing that.
So what's the plan in like the next, I always forget you're fucking 19. What's the plan? What would you like to have achieved by the time you're my age? I'm old. I'm 30.
Lots of things, I guess. I don't know. It's all kind of, if you'd asked me like when I was 12 what I'd like to do, I wouldn't really know. Like, I just kind of enjoy what I do at that one moment, and that has worked for me and has led to me kind of just continuing to do the things I enjoy, and that also has meant success. So it's, I would never have said I want to be a pro bike rider. I would have just said I want to be a bike rider, and that's kind of has just what has happened. So I want to keep being a bike rider. If that means racing, then awesome. If that means not racing, then that's totally fine. Like, that is just a different route. So I think I'll be in bikes for a while, which is awesome, and maybe some more adventure side of things. I don't really know. Like, could it
play
like,
by way, see what happens?
It's just like, I'm at a really exciting time now that I'm trying loads of different things and progressing really well, and like, I'm looking forward to the new challenges that road racing is going to bring. I've literally done like a handful of road races in my life, and I've got the opportunity to do these bigger races with Trinity, and that is going to be really exciting. It's the form and the shape has been really good, and hopefully that lends itself to the road cycling as well. And I know I'll need to brush up on my bunch skills, and like, tactics is obviously a huge part of it, but that's, I think in the next year or two, that is the road side of things. It's something that quite like definitive that I can put my kind of time and energy towards. But yeah, just, yeah, the main thing over the next few years is doing as much as possible, really, road, mountain bike, gravel, cyclocross, because those doors are open for me. So I might as well go and grab it. That could mean a Commonwealth Games or, or like trips to America for gravel. It's, yeah, it's really exciting awesome. That I have those opportunities. So that's, yeah, stay healthy and keep my kind of progress going. And definitely not trying to shut any doors at the moment when the kind of the level I'm at is solid. So no, very happy.
Great. That's the right attitude to have. Now I've got two more questions for you.
Yeah.
One of them, obviously, so Trinity sponsored by Specialized, we know that one, and they're obviously a great sponsor to have on board. Which one of the countless bikes that you've got from them? I can see you've got the Crux for cyclocross, you've got an LA Sprint by the looks of it.
Yeah.
You've got one of the mountain bikes. There's probably even more that I don't know about. What one is your favorite?
Oh, I've been riding my Diverge so much. I think in like under 2 months, I've done like 3,000 Ks on it. It's like, it's been my do it all bike, and it's totally opened up every training ride to doing exactly what I want to do. I'm riding off road and on road. Like I can go out on that bike and ride at 35 K an hour, but I can also go up and down mountain bike trails. It's just, yeah, it's the great thing is it does everything mediocre, which is totally what it's marketed to be. Like that is not a bad thing in any way. It's not the best at being a mountain bike and it's not the best at being a road bike, but it is the best at doing all of those things, like to a level that is really enjoyable. Like it is totally a fun bike on any terrain. Like you're never, like if you took a road bike along like a real rough gravel road, you wouldn't be enjoying yourself. But like this bike can just handle it. So yeah, that's been really, really, really fun. I think that's made lockdown a load easier for me, is having the Diverge. Because it's just opened up these really fun things. So yeah, thank you very much to Specialized for that.
I'm like that with with Sabello, with the Aspero. Like it's a, you know, they market it as a gravel bike, the Aspero. But it's great fun. It's a freaking aerodynamic gravel bike. Yeah. Like it's fun. Like I put a set of 50mm carbon rims on it the other day.
Yeah.
With like slick tires on it, big slick tires. And I was just like, this thing is rapid as fuck.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like it's the same thing. Like it's a bike that's very good all round. And like, I do think that kind of everything bike, I know for me, if I had to have one bike, it would be something like that, like the Diverge or like the Aspero, which is like can cover everything because it just opens so many doors and so many opportunities. Yeah.
I think it was Matt Jones did a video about like his ideal 3-bike garage. And I like the question between like, if it was one bike, what would you have? But if it was 3, what would you have? If I could only have one bike, it would be the Diverge. But if I could have 3, the Diverge probably wouldn't be in it because I would choose 3 bikes that do their jobs really well. I would choose like a really good mountain bike, a road bike, and a cyclocross bike because they all do their jobs really well. But the great thing about the Diverge is that it just covers all these bases to a level that you can just absolutely rip it and have fun. So yeah, I've been really enjoying it.
Yeah, nice. Awesome. So you may or may not know this. I'm going to chuck one last spanner at you. Don't worry, I would never literally throw a spanner at you because you're a nice guy and you're really far away and I don't have like Arnold Schwarzenegger arms. I always ask towards the end, 5 tips or hacks. And I do 5 for a reason because everyone's like, why do you do 5? And I do 5 because like 3 is quite easy, 5 is quite hard.
Yeah,
but it can be anything: cycling tip, cooking tip, life tip. Give it a shot.
Number one is carbs. If you're a bike rider, are so important. So that is tip number one: is eat carbs and fuel your effort. Because if you don't, you will not be having a good time. As Francis has said in videos, as is it Will Gerling has said, like, it's the real deal. You need to eat carbs for being a cyclist.
What's your favorite ride snack?
I've been having these massive Mad Baker bars, which are like flapjack bars, and they're like 100 grams of just like oats, and they're quite easy on my stomach, and I'm happy with them. But you can't really go wrong with a banana and a bar an hour or an hour and a half, and that just keeps me going. And carbs in my bottles from Power Bar, they are super important. It just keeps you topped up. Like when you're drinking, you're eating as well, basically. So that's my top tip is, carbs in the bottle, everything. Just keep on top of your effort, especially if you're going flat out. Nice. Number two, I guess we'll do a cyclocross one, specific to being at a cyclocross race. If you're in doubt of bringing kit or not, just bring it. It'll be useful. Bring as many sets of shorts as you have in your house. Bring all of the jackets. Bring all of the socks. The worst thing that you can do at a cross race is run out of fresh kit after practice, or if you ride there or something, or after the race. Like, yeah, as much kit as possible. Doesn't matter what it looks like, if it's mixed matching, just you never know what the conditions will be. Just bring all of your clothes, all the different gloves, because the temperature is going to go up and down all day. So yeah, that's mega important for cyclocross, is bring all of the kit you own.
Nice, good point. That's a good one.
Number three, we'll do do social media. Just kind of engage with people. I think that's an important thing that I've done in social media is just engage with every comment, even if it's a negative one. It's important to be transparent, and it's something that we get encouraged to from Red Bull side of things, is to constructively kind of engage with even the negative comments. And I'm lucky that not many people go and have a dig at me on my YouTube, but if they do, then I feel like if I have a reasonable response, then it's worth kind of putting that across. So there's no point in wasting breath on getting into arguments, but it's good to engage. And in terms of the positive comments, it will make people's day a lot brighter if you engage in it. So that's always nice.
Really
to
like that. Nice.
Was that number three?
That was three. You got two more.
Oh, this is really hard.
You do. Three's easy, yeah?
Yeah, so three is easy. Five. There you go. We'll do another cyclocross one, because they're mega easy, because it's just day to day, isn't it? I guess another one about fueling is trying things in training. So whether that's specific to race fueling, if you've got a hard session, practice your race day breakfast and your race day gel or your race day fizzy drink or something, so that on race day, when your stomach's all over the place because you've got nervous or because you've just driven, like because you've been late or to the race, like you want to know that your food is not going to make it worse. So but that's, my standard nutrition is breakfast and then a pre-race meal of pancakes. That's 2.5-3 hours before. And then a Red Bull on the rollers and then a gel just before the start. And that's worked for me all cross season, and I'll stick to it. So, if you're looking to change things in training and then put it to the racing.
Super smart. That's super, super smart.
Final one, I guess around training, like it's the biggest step that I've made this summer, I think, is my kind of recovery game has gone up a level, and it's just allowed me to get so much more out of myself. It's just treating recovery as almost like just as important as your training has been massive. And has allowed me to just deal with a lot more intensity and volume. And there's so many different things to try with recovery, whether it's kind of those compression boots or like napping, or like there's things that are for free, different foods, different ways of fueling. It all kind of comes down to is that if you sleep lots and you get good quality sleep, you'll recover better. That's the most important thing. But on top of that, there's other things to do. So yeah, recovery is just as important as hard training. And yeah, definitely do not neglect that.
Sleep is just like the king of everything, isn't it? It's like the biggest no-brainer, which people should I'm not a great sleeper, but I've made a lot of changes to my life to make myself a better sleeper.
Yeah, and it's real mental as well. Like it's the chemicals in your brain. It's the it's very physical and mental. It's such a massive thing, and I've found at my worst points, whether it's training or school or whatever, it kind of all comes back to an issue with my sleep routine. So getting a hold of your sleep routine is really important, and it's something that I've kind of nailed so far this summer, which has been really good. But yeah, if you're struggling with it, then yeah, seek help or just chat to someone about that specific kind of aspect, and they should be able to help you, because it just takes a bit of accountability with these sometimes. Like, you can get into a bit of a kind of a pit of having a really bad sleep routine, and it affects way more than you think. So it's really, really important, I think.
It's like little sleep hacks that I do. So in the evenings, I don't like turn on, when I cook dinner, I have the lights on when I'm cooking dinner. But once I've cooked my dinner, I don't turn the lights on. So I allow my whole flat to get dark naturally.
Yeah, that's great.
My phone shuts off at like 9 o'clock generally, 9 or half 9, it depends on the day. So what I have set on my iPhone is like a thing which locks out all the apps at 9:30. And blackout blinds, can't beat them.
Really good. Especially in the summer, obviously.
In the summer and in the city.
I don't have that issue, but I can imagine.
Yeah, I mean, there's always light. And what else do I do? I otherwise use Headspace, and they do these like sleep casts. Because my problem, personally, my biggest problem is that I do a lot of my thinking in the evenings. Like, because that's what when I'm working, I'm doing, and when the evening is when I'm thinking. The problem with that is that thinking time can quite easily go on and on and on unless I distract my mind. So things like Headspace, because Headspace do a thing where if you've got Spotify, for example, you get Headspace like discounted as part of a bundle. But listening to things like that, which are these sleep casts, which are basically like conversations of absolute bollocks, like they go nowhere. Or like just ocean sounds, things like that, because it's something that like distracts your mind from actively thinking about things you want to think about, to, you know, like work-wise or whatever it is. So, and they're like little hacks that I've done, and they seem to work really well for me. Also, if I'm staying somewhere that's not normal, I take an eye mask and I take earplugs.
That's a travel hack there.
I'm asking earplugs because, like, for example, in Australia, Francis, people won't know this, that guy fucking snores so much. And not just snores, he talks in his sleep as well.
Yeah, same. I talk really bad in my sleep.
I'm not bad for talking, but I grunt.
Yeah.
And, like, sometimes I sound like I'm in pain. Which is, I don't know, what's going on there. But yeah, Francis is a proper snorer and talker, and earplug straight in.
Yeah.
And you just don't have to worry about it then. Definitely works.
Yeah, I did.
Awesome. That's, it's been really, really nice to catch up with you, my friend.
Yeah, good. Now, I hope everyone at home listening has enjoyed it. And I'd say it's nice to catch up and maybe see you at a cross race soon, or any race really, like hopefully when things get rolling again and media and all that stuff. And it's what the brands have been missing is over the last few months, is things to talk about. It's long overdue, but fingers crossed it'll be soon.
I'm sure I'll end up catching you somewhere at a race, and I can, and you can give me another signed postcard. I've still got it, mate.
Good. No, That'll hopefully go up in value. Let's hope.
Is it my kitchen? I've got like a pinboard in my kitchen, yeah. Isn't there? And my partner was like, why have you got a photo of this kid signed in your kitchen? I was like,
it's cyclocross. It's cyclocross. It's important. You'll need to get one from some like WoW or Matcha or something, and then makes me look a bit better next to you on your board.
As opposed to just having you in the center.
Yeah, a bit weird.
Awesome. All right, dude. Thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, awesome. Good.
Thanks, man.
Right.